Aloha, everyone. Welcome to Empowered Living Radio. I'm your host, Tori Eldridge, empowerment specialist and author of Empowered Living Expanded Edition, a guide to physical and emotional protection. Mahalo to Jim Kimo West for tonight's music and to our sponsor, Michael Lowndes and PML Media, our website professionals at pmlmedia.com. I recorded this show in New York City at Thriller Fest, the annual writers' conference for the International Thriller Writers Organization, where I found 10 happy, successful authors to speak with me about staying positive in the face of negativity. Brad Parks, Donald Bain, J.L. Hughes, D.P. Lyle, Boyd Morrison, Raymond Benson, J. Carson Black, Revis Wortham, John Dobbin, and Tom Avitabile. They have vast experience, individual insights, and personal wisdom to share. I had a blast chatting with each of them, and I'm going to lead off with Brad Parks, the only author to have won the Seamus, Nero, and Lefty Award. Hi, Brad. Welcome to Empowered Living Radio. What are these awards?
Yeah, right. Well, the Seamus Award is given by the Private Eye Writers of America.
Ooh.
So it recognizes the great private eye genre, which, of course, is really a backbone of crime fiction. The Nero Award is given by a literary society in New York that exists to venerate all things Nero Wolfe. Nero Wolfe was, of course, the main character of Rex Stout.
Excellent.
Who's one of the great American writers. Nero Wolfe is sort of considered the American Sherlock Holmes, if you will. So every year this literary society gives the Nero Award to what they consider to be the best American mystery of the year.
Well done.
And then the Lefty Award is given at Left Coast Crime, the fiction conference. The Lefty is given to the best humorous mystery of the year.
Okay.
So yeah, I think that's why I can say I'm the only author to win all three, because it's an unusual combination. It's almost like, yeah, I'm the only guy to be able to go down a ski slope in Florida while juggling. I mean, I don't know, but there it is. It's all about product differentiation, right? You know, you got to be able to say I've done something that nobody else has done. So there it is.
I love that. All right. Well, the topic for today is overcoming negativity. How is negativity?
Tori, I'm a wasp. Oh. We don't talk about negativity.
Uh-oh.
Don't you realize that?
Uh-oh.
No, I'm kidding. It's a great topic. Yeah, negativity. Because the thing about it is every author has to deal with it.
Yeah.
And this is
no way around it.
If we're talking about the big picture negativity of, you know, obviously authors are people, therefore we deal with loss, we deal with death, we deal with just horrible things that happen in our lives, but then also that negativity, that dread of as you're sitting down to the computer keyboard or the typewriter or the pad or however it is you write each day. And I think for a while I didn't realize this, but every author is at some point utterly miserable about their own writing.
Oh, no.
No, I think it's absolutely true. I've never met a writer. So, like, one of my writing heroes is Harlan Coben.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's sold 50 million books. He's a wonderful writer. And we've talked about this. There are days when he wakes up and feels like he just flat sucks.
And, right. You know, there's something comforting about that,
yeah,
to those of us who are not mega New York Times,
yeah,
best-selling authors. It's comforting to hear,
yeah,
that our superstars are
that even they wake up, and I certainly have the same experience of, man, there are days when I just feel like I should shoot myself rather than write another sentence.
Do you have those
because,
days?
Oh, yeah, because I am that bad. I am just horrible, and whatever made me think I should do this for a living, and oh, my God, my children are going to starve.
Yeah.
Like, we all deal with that feeling. And
yeah,
so, how do you overcome it?
Because, so how do you?
Well, so this is the trick, and this is the horrible thing. So misery is an inherent part of writing. You know,
hungry.
We are of good writing, let's say, because,
okay,
I think that self-loathing.
Be careful, because I'm a really happy person.
Okay, as am I.
Right,
as am
so
I.
Don't insult my writing.
I'm
here.
A happy,
be very
upbeat
careful.
Person, but like, I think self-loathing is a great fuel for a writer. Really, it is, because it's like the belief that you're terrible, the belief that you are going to be exposed as an utter fraud, right? Unless you bust your ass, right? Unless you make yourself better. So I think it all goes to that drive to make yourself better. And we're on radio, so nobody can
you
see this.
You literally just made me spit water.
Tori
out
just
of my
did
mouth.
A spit take. And I hope this microphone is a little
God.
Bit is waterproof, because it's clean up on aisle six, please.
Oh Lord, that was funny.
So, I think it's all. I would say, what really separates writers who stay at a very high level for a very long time is that fear and that self-loathing and that belief that you're terrible.
Okay,
and
so
trying
part,
to overcome
part of
that.
Your solution is, hey, don't worry about it. It's
yes,
a good thing.
Hate yourself. It's okay.
Embrace
But then here's the exact opposite point.
I'm not drinking any more water whole conversation. I'm just telling you that.
I think part of the trick of being a writer is you have to wake up every morning and believe, that have this utter confidence in yourself, right? You have to believe you are writing the right story, that you are the person to tell this story, that readers will be interested in this story, and that you're telling it in the right way. And if you don't have that confidence, frankly, it's hard to put two words together.
So now hang on a second.
Yeah, I know. That's totally contradictory, right? Both Clark Kent and Superman at the same time.
So how have you found to hold these two diametrically opposed
right.
things in your little brain at the same time?
And
that's what my listeners want to know.
It's good for you to acknowledge the size of my brain, Tori, because it is it has nothing to do with native intelligence. I think that it is important to simply recognize that these negative feelings will exist.
Okay.
That they are an inevitable part of the process, to welcome them, to greet them like the horrible old friend, the frenemy that they are, right? But then talk yourself out of it. I mean, you know, like, so I really, and this sounds ridiculous, but it's what I do. I tell myself I'm the toughest man alive.
Okay.
So when I'm having those days where I just feel like, oh my Lord, I am so bad at this. Why do I think I can do this? I remind myself that I'm the toughest man alive. And as the toughest man alive, I'm going to get through this, and I'm going to get over this. I think the other key is to be disciplined and to build discipline into your daily life.
Okay.
So, like, I write 1,000 words a day.
No matter how horrible you are.
No matter how horrible I feel.
There you go.
No matter how what dreck there is in my world.
There you go.
I write 1,000 words.
Just write 1,000 words of total crap.
It could be. But what I'll tell you, and this is the fascinating thing. My background is as a journalist.
Oh, that's good.
And so journalists,
you're used to those.
We don't miss deadlines.
Good
for
you.
It has made me a very process-oriented writer. You know, I've got my process.
Yeah.
I stick with it. Yes, I refine it a little bit here and there.
Yeah.
But, like, being more process-oriented than necessarily end-results-oriented.
Yes.
I actually have a blog post. I think if you Google Church of 1,000 Words, Brad Parks, you'll find a blog post on this subject.
Nice.
It gives you a feeling of accomplishment at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, we all want to be on the New York Times list. We all want to be published by the best publishing company. All this, but those are such long-term goals that
right.
you're not going to be able to feel good about those if you even
they
are lucky enough.
They can almost be daunting. They can
oh, yeah.
almost
Impossible.
Get in the way and add to your negativity if you
right.
think of those long-term goals.
But
the short
that
ones.
Day, 1,000 words, did I meet my goal? And I feel great about myself when I do. And I, you know, I reward myself in some way. It's a wonderful way to just keep that... to kind of hold at bay that very tricky part about writing, of the rewards of writing are long delayed, of course,
right.
but the demands are daily, right? The demands are absolutely daily, and so how do you give yourself a little reward structure within that kind of a thing?
Thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing that. Now, people are going to want to know more about you.
Mm-hmm.
Where can they find you on the internet?
www.bradparksbooks.com.
Thanks so much.
Tori, it was fun being here.
I have with me Donald Bain, the author of more than 120 books, including 43 books in the Murder, She Wrote series. Color me excited. Anyway, Donald Bain, welcome to Empowered Living Radio.
Thank you. I love being here.
You have such a long and prolific career. I'm guessing that negativity seeps in there, and yet here you are writing these fabulous books. How does it creep in?
Well, it creeps in by people who are critical of what you do for the wrong reasons. Now, before I was a writer, I was a jazz musician and continued playing as a jazz musician right up until recently. And, of course, you would get people who didn't like what you played.
Right.
You would get some musicians who were really mean-spirited in terms of the way they dealt with the band, people
mm-hmm.
in the band. And so, you know, you could get down. You could think to yourself, well, I'm not doing very well because he doesn't like it. And yet you have to realize that a lot of people did like it.
Right.
And so you really have to just separate them in your own mind. And the same holds true with books, reviewers. I love reviews, and I learn from reviews, even bad ones. Provided the reviewer focuses on the book.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll get people who are just nasty, who just want to say something nasty and negative.
That's a very interesting distinction that you make. So you're looking at a review, and if they're focusing on the work, then you're kind of looking at it as, oh, okay, this is a critical review. They have a perspective. Maybe I should pay attention.
Right.
But if they're focusing on saying, oh, that Donald Bain, blah, 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 you kind of just put that aside?
Well, it's a good friend of mine, Lee Goldberg, put on his blog talking about all the books I've written. And he has comments, of course. And one person commented, I prefer quality to quantity.
Ouch.
Now, to me, that's an unnecessarily stupid comment.
Yeah.
But it's not dealing with what you've done, with your creative work.
Right.
It's just them venting a certain, maybe jealousy.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of jealousy involved in people who take that position with creative people.
Yes. Especially when it's creative people who are doing the critiquing,
mm-hmm.
you know, rather than just an audience, a fan. You were talking about the jazz musicians, and
mm-hmm.
you were saying, did you find that when you were a musician, it was the jazz musicians that were the most critical and mean-spirited sometimes?
Well, it varied. Most were very nice, but
mm-hmm.
but there are some people who, I'm thinking of people like Benny Goodman, for instance,
mm-hmm.
who, a great musician, and universally hated by every musician who ever worked with him. You know, and so I've worked with leaders like that.
Yeah.
Who just have an ego that's outsized and just make it unpleasant, you know, while you're playing. And of course, jazz is so much of it is improvisation.
Right.
So it's not judging whether you've read the score correctly because there is no score.
No, of course not.
I suppose what it comes down to is human beings.
Yeah.
There are negative and positive human beings, and you get a negative human being who's going to attack what you've done creatively, whether it's writing a book, playing a tune,
mm-hmm.
You just have to deal with it. You have to have that thick skin that they talk about.
Mm.
If you're going to be a writer and you're going to put out books, you've got to have a thick skin.
Did you always have a thick skin, or was that something that kind of developed through your various careers?
That's a good question. It developed.
Did it?
It developed, yes. Initially, I was devastated when
yeah.
somebody would say something cruel or negative about something I've done.
Right.
But, you know, you develop it out of self-preservation.
Yeah.
Really, if you let that get to you.
And does success help to build that? I mean, because you keep getting contracts, you keep getting books published, and so you have that evidence that clearly
yeah, I think
what
so.
They're saying is not.
Sure.
It's
sure.
not true.
And coming
the whole truth.
Well, and coming back to about learning from reviews, I mean,
yeah.
sometimes what they say is true.
Right.
If a negative thing, they'll pick up something.
Yeah.
And I learn from that. That's fine. That's fair game.
Yeah.
But it's when people who make a blanket condemnation
right.
of what you've done.
Especially in one of those snappy little sound bites. You know, those
yes.
three-word sentences that they think are so cool.
Many years ago, I wrote a book called Coffee, Tea, or Me.
Yes.
And sold 5 million copies worldwide and the whole thing. It was a huge success.
Oh, yeah.
And it was on the New York Times bestseller list for almost a year. And at the end of the year, they did a summary of all the books that had been on the list for a long time
yeah.
with a little comment. And the comment was, Coffee, Tea, or Me, phooey. That's what the guy, which I thought was very funny, because the book was a tongue-in-cheek, you know, tongue-in-cheek look at airline stewardesses written by this bearded guy.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, gosh. Thick skin. Sounds good. There are going to be people who want to learn about you, learn about your books on the Internet. Where can they find you?
www.donaldbain.com.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
I've got a dear friend of mine, J.L. Hughes, author and journalist, all the way from Calgary, Alberta. And this is her 8th year volunteering for Thriller Fest, so I know she's really busy. So, Jennifer, thanks so much for taking the time to come and talk to me.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate this opportunity.
Yeah. Well, I love it. You know, we were at dinner the other night, and I'm talking to you, and we're having such a great time. And I got to say, any kind of negativity just seems to slough off of you like water off a duck. I mean, what is going on with that?
Well, you know, I hope it's that easy. I don't know if it's truly that easy, but I really have a foundation of belief in positive energy. I really believe that the things that come to you you might perceive as negative are often opportunities for you to grow, for you to go beyond where you are now. for you to gain an insight through your experience that benefits other people around you. So I try to view those incidents that maybe other people would see as traumatic or negative as an opportunity. I try to accept them and choose who I can be within that experience.
Mm.
Yeah.
Can you give me an example of that? I mean, you've had some pretty big things going on in your life.
We have. We definitely have. A few years ago, my husband was diagnosed with lymphoma. We had a baby girl who was only 2 years old at the time at home. In the instance that he was diagnosed, we really didn't know how definitive that situation was going to be in our lives. And we walked into it really saying, okay, this is the experience that we've been asked to go through. Who are we going to be in this? My husband is a hero of mine, and he went through it with such bravery and such dignity and grace. I got to see a side of him that perhaps in my entire life I would never have known had it not been for that trauma, for that challenge. So I definitely view it as an opportunity for growth for both of us. And through it, we gained an experience that we couldn't come to people who are faced with this type of thing, this type of diagnosis, and say, I know where you are, and I can help you get through this if you want me to, I'm here. Those
wow.
words wouldn't have meaning if we didn't have the experience ourselves. You know, there are things that you cannot offer wisdom to if you haven't been there. So all of those things, I really believe it's a choice. Yes, they change your life. There's no doubt that they are challenging. There's hardship involved. But you gain a strength from them, too.
I love that that statement. Who am I going to be in this situation? That is really important. And we have that choice.
We do. I think that sometimes the world has become so incredibly busy. There is so much noise in it that it's hard to find a moment of space, of silence, to stop and say, wait a minute, who am I going to be in this? But I think it's imperative because we're here. This is our life. You don't want it to be something you look back on and say, hey, I had a great opportunity there, and I let the negative of that situation overshadow the chance that I had to really be something in it.
Right. So. And also, that is a powerful statement. Who am I going to be? That says I have a choice.
Yeah.
And choice is power.
It is empowering. It is. I think when trauma hits or when difficulty or challenge hits, often the panic itself of it, the realization that this is happening, I think it's something we have to try to move through fast. I think for me, I try to say, no, accept it is.
Mm-hmm.
This just is. Don't judge it. Don't label it, because then you've got yourself caught up in that situation.
When you say label it like this is a bad thing,
this is a bad thing.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, you
don't
know.
Don't give it that good or bad. Kind of let it be neutral.
Yeah.
It's not a good or bad thing. It is a thing.
It is.
Yeah. Right.
Yes. I definitely view situations as it just simply is.
I absolutely agree with that.
So when you come to it from that perspective, you do gain a little space from it, where you can now make a decision. Okay.
Emotional distance.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which we definitely need, especially in today's world. So that's a perspective I try to apply to these things. Sometimes things catch me off guard. I am totally human. There's no doubt about it. But that is how I try to come at life.
But when you catch it, you see it early.
Yes.
And you can change the direction of your thoughts and the way you're choosing to be in that moment, right?
Yes, I think acceptance is key. I think, especially if you're striving for a particular goal, if you put too much pressure on yourself to attain it in a certain way, and it doesn't happen in that exact way, then you've set yourself up for disappointment, discouragement, and maybe you're going to turn away from your destiny. I think that it's better to say, this is the goal as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what particular way, what shape or form it's going to take, but I'm on the path.
Mm-hmm.
That way you stay on the path, even if it doesn't look exactly the way you assumed that it would. When I started out as a model, I ended up writing articles for the police force.
I love that.
I ended up obsessed with crime and criminology and talking to Roy Hazelwood of the FBI and interviewing him on... a sexually sadistic serial killer tour.
Sure.
This is not the path of a model. And I ended up here as an author with all of that base contributing vitally to what I do as an author. So you never know what your path's going to look like. I think the key is to be on the path and not set yourself up for discouragement and how that might look to you.
Mm-hmm.
Always think, well, this is contributing to my path one way or another, and go from there.
I like to think of it as, you know, we need to give the universe a little room to wiggle.
Yes, absolutely. I agree with that. That's great. That's brilliant, Tori.
I've been saying this frequently.
Wiggle room.
You know, it's those pictures in our head, right?
Yes.
They get us into trouble all the
time.
They do. The picture of the perfect job, of the perfect spouse, of the perfect kids, of the perfect home.
Yeah.
It's like, guys, no. You're never going to make it all look like the picture.
No, and I think that perfect has got to be redefined.
Yes.
There isn't such a thing. I think I've lived long enough and done enough to know that this idea that perfect, the word seems to encompass in the past, or for many, doesn't really exist. Perfect is messy.
I love that.
You know,
okay, give the universe wiggle room and perfect is messy. This is awesome. I hope you're taking notes.
But it is. You know, how I got to where I am now is messy.
Yeah.
There was a lot of life lessons through the course of it. I don't think if I'd known ahead of time, I would have said, yeah, I really want to go through that. There's no way. But if I hadn't, I wouldn't have the quality of the experience I have now.
Yes.
So, yeah, so perfect is messy.
Love it.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming and talking
to me
about this.
It's always
great.
Lovely to speak to a friend. So.
I know, yeah.
Yeah.
All righty, girl. Talk to you later.
Thank you.
Okay, I've got award-winning author of both fiction and nonfiction, D.P. Lyle, a.k.a. Dr. Doug. Welcome to Empowered Living Radio.
Thanks for having me here, Tori.
This is so fun. So you are one of the most positive, happiest people that I know, even though you write about nasty ways of killing people. And I thought you'd be a great person to talk to about negativity. Where does it come from?
Life itself. You read the news, you do anything, there's a lot of negativity out there, and there's a lot of negative things going on. But I think you keep your life busy. You have too much downtime, you mope, you whine, you stare at your navel, and you worry too much. Stay busy. Do things that are active. Do things that make you think. I'm always doing a couple of things at once. I'm not the kind that can sit and just do one thing.
Now, people always say it's the women who are the multitaskers, but here you are, a manly man, and you're saying you can do multiple things at the same time. I like that.
Well, when I was in medical school, I couldn't study in a quiet room, and to this day, I can't. The reason is my mind starts wandering.
Yeah.
If I've only got one task going, my mind starts going somewhere else. So when I'm studying, when I'm writing, I always have music or the television. I'll have the news or I'll have a sports thing on. When I have ambient noise, I can focus.
Mm-hmm.
Don't ask me why, it's just the way it is. But to the negativity question, be active. Do things. Do things that stimulate your mind. I've always said everything in life is either a learning experience or a teaching experience.
Oh, I like that. I
agree
with that.
It's what you do.
Yeah.
And so I'm always learning stuff, always reading about stuff. I'm on the internet finding stuff all the time. I'm in news groups and blogs, you know, I have RSS feed. I'm always reading that kind of stuff. I'm watching documentaries on television or the news. I'm reading. I'm doing all kinds of stuff. And then writing, of course.
So all the learning is positive stimulus. But at the same time, when you're looking at all that news thing, some people get very down and negative when they start, you know, paying too much attention to news and things like that.
Oh, yeah. The news can be infuriating.
Yeah, it can.
And it can be depressing. And
right.
It can be where you just say, I give up. There's too many things wrong. Nobody's going to fix them. The whole place is going to hell in a handbasket, you know.
So
and
there
you
are reading the news. How do you get what you're talking about, which is the positive stimulation, and you avoid the negative, the world's going to hell in a handbasket?
Well, because while the news is telling all those stories in one ear, I'm reading about Alabama football on the internet. Or I'm looking at short stories. I'm looking at blog feeds. I'm looking at other stuff at the same time.
And
it's just the way it is.
Wow. And so for you, that kind of getting your mind occupied on a variety of things, keeping it from overly fixating and becoming overly emotional on one thing?
On particularly one thing, yes. especially if that thing's negative.
This is really fascinating to me, Doug. Okay, so let's talk about obsessive thought, because a lot of negativity, right, runs in these obsessive thought loops in our head.
Yeah.
Does it work for that, too?
Yes, and so do other things. I mean, things like taking walks, things like playing a guitar, things like, well, just pick up a good book and read it.
Yeah.
Because it takes you to another world.
Yeah.
And sometimes you need to be in another world.
Yeah.
You need to get away from this world and get another world.
But do you get in those obsessive thought loops? Is that like a thing that happens to you or no?
I get angry and rant and rave about stuff. Of course. Everybody does.
And yeah.
You can sit and talk and get angry in a conversation about, you know, ugh,
yeah,
I wish
right.
they'd fix this. I wish they'd do that. I wish this would happen. But at the end of the day, I think that's kind of cathartic.
Yeah.
You kind of get that out,
yeah.
and then you are doing something else. And the next thing you know, my parents taught me a lot. My,
mm-hmm.
my father was very analytical and very focused, and he taught us, you get up in the morning, you put the backpack on, you go to work every day, you do the right thing. My mother was insane. My mother turned everything into a party.
Oh, my goodness.
Every minute of every day was a party with her.
Oh, wow.
She could make anything fun. So if it's not fun, don't do it.
Yeah.
If you can't laugh about it, even the darkest of humors, and the stupidest of humor. If you can't laugh about it,
yeah.
then what's the point? I think everything is fun.
You know, I so get
everything
that.
Everything is fun.
I so get that.
But it's one of the reasons that doctors and nurses and people in the medical profession and cops, I think, have the same thing. If you're with the general public, what
yeah.
we call civilians,
yeah.
you can't tell the same stories you tell.
Oh.
Because they look at you like, oh, my God, what's wrong with you?
That's
and
right.
the answer is, it was really funny. You had to be there. Yeah, I mean, the guy was dying, but trust me, this was really funny.
I know, right, right.
But
no,
everything's funny.
I am so there with
yes.
you. Even in training in martial arts, there were certain things we just could not tell non-ninjas. They just would not get it, right? Or I was talking to a friend who came back from Iraq, and he was a sniper, and he told this story, and he said, yeah, you had to be there. And I said, I totally get it. You can tell
yes.
it with me. So I'm there with you. So you're saying, keep busy, keep your mind going, and at the same time, laugh.
I tell all of my patients, the last thing I tell them when I walk them back up to the front so they can check out, and I say, and don't forget to laugh a lot, because it's good medicine.
I love it. Thank you so much.
Thank
and people
you
are going to want to know where to find you on the Internet. What's your website?
DPLyleMD.com. That's DPLyleMD.com.
Excellent. I've got Boyd Morrison here with me, international best-selling author of adventure thrillers. Boyd, it is great to have you here.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
You know, you've done so many things in your life. Writing is just a very exciting part of that. I know that there's negativity involved, there's rejection, there's all sorts of things, and yet you keep pushing forward and you have such incredible success and you always seem to have a smile on your face. How do you do this?
I think it's just loving what you do and always feeling like there's more to look forward to. And that's true with writing as well, because I know there's always more stories I can tell. I have other ideas that I want to get out there. I know that there's more to look forward to in my career, things that I didn't even know were possible. Just last year, Clive Cussler asked me to co-write a book with him. And I had no idea that was coming. And then all of a sudden, here I am writing a book with the guy who got me interested in thrillers in the first place 35 years ago.
Wow.
And now I'm writing books with him and brainstorming ideas with him. And, you know, it just never occurred to me that that could happen.
Oh, my God.
So I never know what's going to come. But, you know, I do run into rejection just like any other author.
Even now?
Oh, even now.
Really?
Yeah. Well, when I started my career, I wrote two books, couldn't find an agent for them, and wrote a third book. And I was prepared to write a fourth book if I couldn't get that published. And I did find an agent for it. She sent it to 26 New York publishers, which, as you know, is pretty much everyone. And we got what I call rave rejections.
Oh, yeah.
Where they said they love the story. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they say they love the story, but they just can't figure out a way to market it or place it in a crowded market. So we were pretty much done, and it was around the time the self-publishing started on electronic books.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I suggested, well, maybe I should just put my e-books out there. And my agent said, yeah, we have nothing to lose. Why not try it? And so I did, and they started selling very well. And then I got a publishing deal for that book she tried to market.
Yeah.
And now it's published in 22 languages.
Wow. And did
then
they
those
go
other,
back and publish
and
the other
ones? Two books that I couldn't even find an agent for are now published worldwide as well.
Wow.
So, you know, but I did four books with Simon & Schuster and got to the fifth book, and we had a contract for it, and I turned it in, and they said, oh, we don't want to publish this, so we're canceling your contract. And so,
after all that success,
I was rejected again.
You were rejected again. Oh,
yeah.
Great.
So,
great.
You know, you're never secure. You know, you keep got to keep fighting.
God, this is like acting.
Exactly. Yeah. I've been an actor for a long time, too, and it prepared me for the rejection.
Oh, yeah.
Because you just got to keep putting yourself out there.
That's something we have in common.
Yeah.
I have the whole Broadway TV film thing, and yes,
yeah, and you know you can't just take a rejection and then go, okay, my career's over. You just got to keep going.
Right.
And it's in fact it's just part of it.
Yeah.
You know that for every one job you get, you're probably going to go through 10 or 20 rejections to get there.
Let me ask you: did acting come early in your life, your professional life, like in your early 20s?
Well, I started acting when I was 13 in my school and did it through high school and then kind of got disenchanted with it in college. And so I kind of took 15 years off.
Oh,
and then I started doing it again when I moved to Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And probably since then I've done about 30 stage plays and I've been in commercials and short films. And I went down to Hollywood for 4 months to live down there and explore the industry and take more classes and... yeah, so it's something that I want to keep doing, but I see writing as my career.
Well, fortunately, you can do both of those at the same time.
Yeah.
And one might actually make you more sane for the other.
Yeah, more sane. I think they complement each other well. When you're a writer, you're sitting at home all day by yourself.
Yeah.
Nobody there except you and your ideas in front of a computer, and you have to do everything. For your story, you are the actors for all the parts. You're the director, you're the writer, you're the set designer, you're the location scout, you're the costumer, you're the special effects guy. So you have to do everything.
Yeah.
And so that's why I like going and acting, because I only have to worry about my one role.
But you're part of a big
collaboration. But we're collaborating,
we're
having fun, we laugh, I get up on my feet,
so
I'm not just sitting, and the director just tells me what to do. And whenever I come to a conference like this, it re-energizes you, because not only do you realize everybody goes through the same things you do, but you hear all of these great writers, and you say, I want to get back and do this too.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I find myself with a lot of energy for writing when I get back from a conference.
So you're going to give the one key to folks who would love to feel the way you do. What's the key?
Be persistent.
Okay.
I mean, don't take no for an answer. Trust your gut. If you really believe that you can do this, then you can. And it's good to surround yourself with positive people. That's another thing that I really emphasize is, if you have negative people in your life, it's going to make you negative.
I'm so glad you brought that up. It is so important. Surround yourself by positive people.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Boyd, thank you so much for taking time out of Thriller Fest. I know you are everywhere on panels, you're hosting panels, you're just doing so much, and I'm so appreciative that you would take the time to come and talk to me.
My pleasure.
People are going to want to find you on the internet. Where can they find you?
At www.boydmorrison.com.
Excellent. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I've got Raymond Benson here, the author of over 30 titles and probably best known for being the first American author to write the official James Bond novels. Not to mention that he's got a fabulous series out called The Black Stiletto that Tony and I are trying darn hard to get on television. So I just thought I'd throw that in. But anyway, hey, Raymond, welcome to Empowered Living Radio.
I'll give you a virtual hug.
Excellent. So, you know, I'm talking to positive people about negativity, and you're a real positive person.
I try to be.
Yeah, and you've been in this business a long time.
I have.
So I've got to think that you face some negativity here and there.
Yes. Well, you know, the first 20 years.
Oh, my gosh. That's when you need a long career when you start with the first 20 years.
Well, let's say the first 15 years were, you know, pretty negativity-free.
Mm-hmm.
When I started writing the Bond novels, which was the mid-90s. This was just when the internet was becoming a big thing.
Wow.
And it's when suddenly people could realize they could criticize people anonymously.
Oh, I see where this is going.
All the big fan franchises, the big things that all the Comic-Con people love, like comic books and Batman and Buffy the Vampire and Star Trek and Star Wars and all those kind of big fan-based properties, which James Bond is one of those. You suddenly find that they have huge, huge, massive fan bases, and none of them all think alike.
They're all very opinionated and passionate.
Yes, passionately opinionated about what they think in their mind that character who they love, that they've grown
like
up with.
Like family.
Yes,
yeah.
Who it should be. And anybody who messes with it is, you know, disturbed. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, also, there was the, you know, with the internet, people started putting up fan pages and the things called message boards.
Oh.
You know, where people can comment on stuff. You know, like people would start a thread. What do you think of the new Pierce Brosnan Bond movie? People from out of the woodwork would come and comment.
10,000
you know.
People.
Yes. And usually with pseudonym, you know, with usernames and not their real name.
Yeah.
And so they feel free to say whatever nasty thing they want. Or good thing, too. I mean, there are plenty of positive stuff, too.
So you're reading these things. God, how does that feel?
At first, you know, I didn't even know all that stuff existed until I was about 4 or 5 years into the Bond novels. In fact, it was probably around the year 2001, and I'd been writing them since 96.
Oh, my.
And then in 2001, somebody pointed out to me, have you seen this stuff on this one Bond fan site? You know, and I went, well, no, I didn't know anything about it. So I went and looked, and I was, like, horrified because people were saying the cruelest,
nastiest, most
horrible things. Now, don't get me wrong. I had plenty of fans, too.
Yeah.
But you knew about them. Yeah, I knew about them. I got, you know, fan letters and things like that. And then I started getting, you know, the hate mail, you know, when people found out I had a website and emails, and I actually got death threats.
Oh,
death
my
threats.
Gosh.
I actually went to an attorney in Chicago just to go, should I pay attention to this or what? You know, what should I do?
Well, how wounding.
Yeah,
oh,
it was very depressing for that summer of 2001. It was a shock. I naively thought, gee, I thought everybody liked me.
Right, exactly. I wrote James Bond. Everybody loves him. They must love me. I'm writing good books.
Yeah. And, but, you know, like I said, there were plenty of positive people.
How you kind of got yourself out of the woes? Did you remind yourself about all the good?
Well,
or
yeah,
did Randy smack you upside the head?
Yeah, basically, Randy, my wife, and several other people, you know, that I would talk to, and even the Ian Fleming people would just say, forget it, you know, don't worry about it, you know. And then I started looking back, and Ian Fleming himself, he suffered monumental criticism sometimes from his wife's closest friends.
Wow.
In fact, there's a story where, you know, his wife, Anne Fleming, would hold little dinner parties with her literary friends, and Somerset Maugham was part of that. And one time Fleming came home from something, and they were all in the living room reading from his latest book and laughing.
And it wasn't supposed to be funny.
No.
Not a little comedic point in Bond.
Right.
No.
So
oh,
he just kind of
went, that is
oh, well, and went up the stairs and just didn't even say hello.
But that must have kind of been comforting for you, though, right?
It's
comforting
helped.
To me to hear these big, huge, iconic stars and
right.
knowing that they go through things.
Yeah, exactly.
Little me, I go, oh, okay, all right, that makes me feel a little bit better to know that we're in this together. You know?
When Fleming published the book, The Spy Who Loved Me, that one was very controversial because he wrote it in the first-person voice of a woman.
Oh.
It's told from the story of the Bond girl.
Wow.
So it was very different. And critics trashed it. And he was so upset by that he told his publishers, you can't publish this in paperback. And when it comes time for the selling the film rights, you can sell them the title, but not the story.
Really?
Yeah. So that book did not appear in paperback in England. It did in America, but in England, it didn't come out in paperback till after his death. And
how was the book? I mean,
I think it's fine.
I mean, it should have been released.
Yeah, I think it's a fine. I mean, it's not one of his best Bond novels by any means, but I mean, it's in the lower tier.
Okay.
But I don't think anything he wrote was bad. I think Ian Fleming was pretty darn great.
Right. You know, a lot of us aspire to Ian Fleming's worst, right?
Yeah,
and we would say yay.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, when the movie people did it, they did The Spy Who Loved Me, the Roger Moore one, and they used the title, but of course the story had nothing to do with the book.
Right. So I guess the moral of the story is you can't please everybody.
Exactly.
There will be bad things said about you, and you got to remember that there are also good things, and think about that.
And one thing I learned is don't go to those websites. Don't even look at them.
Yeah. I like that.
Now, you know, sometimes I'm on Amazon, and I see, okay, there's some reviews on my new books. Let's see what they say.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're all over the map. You know, there's 5 stars or 4 stars or 3 stars, and there's 1 star reviews.
Right.
And,
right.
And so now, you know, I think I've gotten enough experience that that first glimpse of the 1 star, you kind of feel a sting, and then you go, brush it away. It's like it was just a mosquito.
Right. You know? And don't go back to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't keep reading it and reading it and reading it and keeping it in the forefront of your
head. The more intelligent 5-star review that's right above it
there
is 6 paragraphs long and goes into detail and things. And
there
the 1-star review is a 1-sentence thing.
You know, misspelled kind of with poor grammar.
Right, exactly.
Almost on. Okay, Raymond, I love that. There are going to be people who want to find you on the Internet. You have a couple of websites. What are they?
RaymondBenson.com. And then I have a site dedicated to my new character, the Black Stiletto, and that is theblackstiletto, one word, .net.
Brilliant. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, I am having way too much fun. I've got J. Carson Black here. Okay, we're talking number one Kindle bestseller, New York Times bestseller, USA Today bestselling thriller writer. Hey, Maggie.
Hey.
Welcome to Empowered Living Radio.
I'm happy to be here.
So how is negativity sneaking into your professional life, and how do you get it the hell out of there?
Well, that's a good question, especially for an author, because we get it all the time. First of all, there are reviews, and not all of them are complimentary, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic, actually, to see what some people say. The most ridiculous things, they'll talk about it as if it's some other book from some other planet, you know, like my book was set in Poughkeepsie, except my book was not set in Poughkeepsie, or that they didn't like the brown bear, and there's no brown
bear in my
book. So that's what happens when you get a lot of reviews on Amazon. You get some really crazy things.
Okay, so there are reviews. What other ways does negativity creep in to a writer's life?
I don't know. I think earlier in my writing life, I used to compare myself to other authors. And you know, you probably sometimes still do.
I think a lot of authors do that, right?
They're up there.
And
I'm
not
down
just
here.
Authors, either.
Yeah.
So how do you turn that, I don't know, really want to say jealousy or envy, but yearning, how do you turn that from something that makes you feel bad into something that is, say, inspiring?
Well, it's always nice to see, you know, there are so many wonderful authors. That's the really good side of it. You can learn so much from reading, you know, the best.
Mm-hmm.
And I do that constantly. I look at them and I think, boy, I would like to write like them, or I'd like to be able to have their ability to do things. That, you know, it just seems like it's falling off a log for a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I've always done, talk about rejection, I tried often to break into the big 6, or now it's big 5, publishers.
Mm-hmm.
And I did get in on a low level at one time, but there's always the rejection of that, and plenty of rejections. You know, you get the rejections that your agent rejects you, and before you get an agent, other agents reject you because they don't want you for their client. So it's pretty much par for the course. But I do learn so much from the best authors, and I just tear apart their books. I write all over them and just, you know, turn it into lemonade.
Yeah.
Well, not their books, because that would be really messy. I just wouldn't do that.
But it's interesting what you said about rejection, because, of course, in my writing career, my young writing career, I am seeing that. But More importantly, I started out as an actor, singer, dancer, Broadway, television, film, and oh, let me tell you, your life is one mass of rejection, right?
Oh, horrible.
And then when my son got into acting, I said, okay, what you have to do is you have to look at an audition as an opportunity to perform in front of a captive audience. So that you go in and it's like, oh, goody, I get to perform and you have to watch.
Well, that's a very good pep talk, and it reminds me that my initial career was as an opera singer. So I had a lot of those auditions, and I wish I'd listened to you then, because they were just torture.
Weren't they?
And they, you know, they hold up their hand, thank you,
right,
and off you go. You just toddle off the stage with your head down going, oh. So I thought, well, I'll do something that's really safe. I'll just stay at my house in the desert, and I'll write books, and everybody will love them. And all of that came true. I stayed at home in the desert by myself and wrote books, except that not everybody liked them.
Right. It was great when you were writing in home, but then you have to send it out,
yeah,
and then you get these things. So when you do that and you get these rejections, do they still sting as much now? Or now that you've got all these published books and these big awards behind you, when the rejections come, do you just kind of go, oh, okay, you know?
I'm getting used to it. I mean, I think it's really, really good if you look at your reviews on Amazon, for instance, because mm-hmm. you're going to get 5-star streak, you know, one after another after another, and then all of a sudden that 1-star comes right in, and you just, you know, you look at it and go, oh, okay.
So if you had to sum it up in one word, your magic key for staying positive and staying on track?
Writing.
Ah, just get back to work.
That's where the joy is.
Good
that,
job.
That's really where the joy is. And that's the thing that I think I have in common with most authors is it's just the writing and having, you know, trying for a personal best every time and just loving what you're doing. And I've never had so much fun in the last few years. It's just loving what I'm writing.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for coming on Empowered Living Radio. There are going to be people who want to learn more about you. Where can they find you on the net?
jcarsonblack.com.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, I've got with me historical mystery thriller author Revis Wortham, an old soul that belongs in a different time. Revis?
Hey, thank you, Tori. I appreciate the offer to be here with you today.
Thanks for joining me. I've been looking forward to it.
I have too. I have.
Now, you are just an upbeat character.
Yes.
And yet, you know, negativity is out there. Mm-hmm. Boy, whether we choose to feel it or not. So I'm guessing that it comes knocking at your door. What do you do to get rid of it?
It does come, and it's most of it's self-imposed on my own writing. I think all of us internalize those things when we're writing and when we're not writing. When I'm writing, I'm guilty I'm not reading. And when I'm reading, I feel guilty that I'm not writing, you know. But I will submerge myself into a manuscript, and I'll be working so hard on it, and I think it's going well, as you know and other writers know. And then I will stop for a while and go pick up a book by some of my own favorite authors. And the minute I read their works, my work is garbage.
It just
yanks the floor out from under me. And so I fight that quite often, and it's a double-edged sword. I have to read these guys to refresh myself, but at the same time, they make me think that I'm just nothing but a hack.
Oh, my goodness.
And it absolutely, and I tell my wife about it, and it drives me nuts. She's, of course, you know, one of my greatest supporters, and she says, no, your work is really, really good. And she goes, look at what the critics have said, because all of my works have been critically acclaimed. But at the same time, when I look at the books and I read them, it's not fulfilling to me for some strange reason. And so, you know,
Johnny Depp can't watch himself on film.
I've heard he never watches himself.
And
I haven't read my books since I've written them. I write them, they go out, and I will not pick them back up and read them because I'm afraid of what I'm going to read. You know,
right.
Because I will write and I will edit until the last possible moment. And
mm-hmm.
Most of us know that you can edit for the rest of your life and not finish with it. You just abandon a book, you don't finish it.
That's interesting. I like that. You just abandon a book. You don't finish it.
You have to. Because
like a child, you just leave it by the side of the road. For yourself.
You do the best you can, and then you just send it on out into the world, which is child rearing, you know, honestly. But I have several ways to combat that. I mean, I really am. I'm upbeat. I write humor. Well, a lot of people that read my books don't realize that I was a humor. I still am a humor columnist.
I didn't know that.
Yes, I had a syndicated newspaper column from 1988. Up until about the time the internet, that little thing called the internet came in.
And it started
killing off all of the newspapers. The first thing they would do, it would abandon their columnists, which was a huge frustration for us because I was in over 50 papers at the time. I was self-syndicated.
And
talking to a couple of the big national syndicates. They were looking at me. Still listed it on the masthead of Texas Fishing Game magazine as the humor editor. So my escape was to write outdoor humor. I love well-written humor. I don't like jokes, but I like well-written humor. And so I would submerge myself into an alternate world of unreality. My views of the outdoors, hunting, fishing, camping, canoeing, backpacking, and the humor that I brought into. And that humor brings me back so that I can go back and write the dark mysteries of the dark novels.
Okay, so you'd be writing on your novel, mm-hmm. and you're feeling like, wow, I'm doing a great job. And then you read one of the works of your heroes, and you're loving that, and you go, oh, my stuff is crap.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go back and you work on your humor columns so that you can kind of rejuvenate and get that good feeling again so that you can go back and write the novel?
Yes. That's exactly how that works. And then when I'm really in the zone and I'm feeling good about what I'm doing and all that negativity is out, the humor will actually creep into the novels. Humor situations, because life is full of humor situations.
Yeah.
And so I will add those in there. And you can really tell when I'm on top of the game, because that's when that comes out in the novel.
And then
the darkness comes back, you know, the darkness of the story.
Yeah.
And when that happens, then it's another cycle back.
So let me ask you this. So let's say you're in the writing the novel thing, and then you go and you're reading your heroes, mm-hmm. and then you're feeling, you know, down in the dumps. Do you ever go back to writing the novel after that?
Yes.
And do you see that creeping into your book?
It does. My if you read between the lines of my books and my columns and the novels, you read my entire life. There's a dark side to life. You know, I don't know if I'm from a tiny, tiny town in Northeast Texas, and it's like looking at the ocean. It's very calm on top,
mm-hmm.
but all the things that are buried that we don't see are seething down in there, and those come out in the stories. And
so I guess my question is, when you're reading from your heroes and you're feeling like you're just a hack,
mm-hmm.
and you go and you start writing anyway, mm-hmm. are you writing well?
Yes.
Okay. What allows you to do it anyway?
I was trying to find a better word than experience, but I think that's what it is.
It's because it's worked in the past.
In the past, and the experience that I got by writing for deadlines, and getting you have to have good quality, you know, on a deadline, and every week you have to turn something in that is quality work.
So even though you have that doubt that's saying, Revis, just pack it in.
Mm-hmm.
You're just no good.
Mm-hmm.
You're never going to be like these other guys.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a louder voice in your head that says, Revis, you're going to do it anyway.
And you have done it. And
you will do it again
exactly.
and again and again.
Exactly. And you never give up. That's what my dad and my granddad all beat into me mentally all my life. Dad said, you never, ever give up, because if you give up, you've lost.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I love it. Thank you so much for coming on Empowered Living and sharing that. Revis, people are going to want to find you. Where do they find you on the net?
You can find me at www.revisz.wortham.com. And it's spelled, it's an odd spelling. It's R-E-A-V as in victory, I-S-Z-W-O-R-T-H-A-M. You type that in, you'll go straight to my website, and you'll find what's going on in Northeast Texas back in the mid-1960s, the Red Rivers.
I love
country.
It.
Thank you so much, Tori.
You're welcome. Thank you. I have John Dobbin here with me. He is the author of the recently released Deadly Diamonds, based on the blood diamonds of Sierra Leone. Hey, John, welcome.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be with you, Tori.
What a great subject for a book.
Oh, boy, it has been. We've had a lot of fun with that.
So I'm thinking that in writing this book, I don't know, but in your profession as a writer in general, negativity starts to seep in, and I'm guessing that you have ways to get around it, over it, under it, blast through
mm-hmm.
it. Tell me about this.
Ways to get around it. You know what? You know, it's funny. I think that it's a verb and not a noun. I think that this kind of thing is something you actively do.
Oh, I like that.
I think that the feeling of happiness isn't just, hey, I wake up in the morning and I have coffee and I'm happy. I don't think it works that way.
Mm-hmm.
I wake up in the morning and I know I'm going to face a blank page writing that day. I always wake up worried. Is any idea going to come to me, or isn't it? And then I force myself to have faith. Have faith and it will come. Mm-hmm. And then I cheer up and I deliberately become happy. By the time I say good morning to Lois, you know, my wife in the morning, the both of us are in a great mood, but it's because we have willed ourselves there. It doesn't just happen.
I really, really agree with that.
Good.
That is such a powerful statement. And I like that you were talking about this, have faith.
Yes.
That, I mean, that, I mean, we're not even talking about religious faith. We're talking about the faith that it's in you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I do it on a religious faith, but whatever faith, you know, works for you is is it. Because where do these ideas come? You know, the most common question that an author is asked at any speech you give, somebody's going to be out there who's going to say, where do you get your ideas? And the answer clearly is, except for the real egotists, I don't know. I really don't know. I don't think there's a little well of them inside that I just lower a bucket and up they come.
So they do have that expression, divine inspiration.
And that's where they come from, really, Tori. And you've got to, and how do you know that it's going to happen today? How do you know that today it's not going to, absolutely, you've had your last idea? And the answer is, you have faith that it's going to continue, because there's no reason that the Lord or, you know, is
right.
going to shut it off. Really.
Yeah, that is,
but that's an active thing. Again, it's a verb, not a noun, faith. And it's something that you have to actually exercise that faith muscle every day.
Yeah, because if you let that atrophy, that doubt and that fear can just take over.
Oh, and it will. And it loves to. And I just can just hear, every morning I can hear these voices that are telling me, it's not going to happen today. You'll never get an idea today. You know, you might as well give up. Go mow the lawn, because you know you can mow the lawn.
Because you know you can mow the lawn.
Right. But you don't know that you're going to be able to write the next chapter. And I'm telling you right now, you won't be able to. And then I've got to say, my faith says, yes, I will. Yes, I will.
Wow.
Yes, I will. And,
wow.
And Tori, it happens every single day.
Every single day, the yes, I will
comes true.
You hear, but every single day, do you hear the little negative
every
words?
Every day.
Oh,
you betcha.
Wow.
Yeah.
So if they start to creep up, you know, breakfast or whatever, and you're just
going
to take a sip of your coffee and shut them back down.
That's just, yeah, I think you'd probably do that too. You've got the energy of six people, and I bet, and the smile and the exuberance. And I bet you do the same thing.
You know, I do the same thing. I don't think I hear the negative voices that often anymore.
Good.
And the reason that is because of how strong the muscle is that we were talking about.
Way to go, yes. Yes.
Yeah, because as you say, when you strengthen that muscle, that faith, that inner belief that, you know, against all reason,
against all doubt, good.
Against all evidence, that you will come up with an idea.
That's right.
Once you really get a hold of that. You know, with me, what it is I have an inexhaustible confidence, an inexhaustible belief in my ability to learn what needs to be done.
Oh, that's great. Oh, that's marvelous.
It's not that I know everything. It's that
I have
an unwavering belief that I can learn it.
I'm going to take that home with me. That's great.
Yeah, and that,
I like that.
And that helps me to get rid of that, to put that fear and that doubt aside. So
beautiful.
If I don't have the ability now, I'll find it.
That's beautiful. That's great. Boy, I feel sorry for people who don't have that ability that to focus it and function it and to find the, you know, the door opening that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, that's as good as you're going to feel all day.
And if you don't just, if that's not just part of how you are, and you're listening to this and you're thinking, you know, I wish I could get some of that. How the heck do you get something so esoteric?
Right.
Any thoughts on that?
Wow. you know, I suppose there are ways. I don't know any of them because they've never worked for me. There are books on these subjects. There are speakers who are motivational speakers.
Let me ask you this. Do you have kids?
Yeah, we have one son, yes.
Okay, how do you instill this in your son?
Boy, you know, by bringing him up. John is full of the same kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
John is full of spirit and positiveness and light. Great sense of, you know, I think that's an enormous key to this kind of, not egotism, but self-confidence, is a great sense of humor, and John exudes it.
All right, so the ability to laugh at yourself and
I think
having
that's
that
very
positive
important.
Spirit.
And to laugh at other people, I think that's important too. Not ridiculing, but just seeing the humor, the comedy in life.
Yeah,
I think that's a
really
great gift.
Funny. Humans are funny.
Yes, they are.
We are. And if we learn to appreciate that,
right.
Life gets really amusing.
That's right. It's like a pitcher and a catcher. You know, the pitcher is out there. The humor and comedy is out there. But you need a catcher. You need to be able to receive it, recognize it, and then, you know, let it brighten your life.
Yeah. So I guess probably what we're talking about is, folks, when you start hearing those little naysayers in your head telling you you're not going to have this and it's all over and you can't have that and you're good for nothing and whatever,
right.
Just say, you know what, hush.
Shoot them.
Just hush.
That's right.
Just hush.
That's right.
I don't care what you're saying.
Right.
I will. I do and I can.
That's
and
right.
And hush.
That's
and
exactly
I have
right.
a cup of coffee and go get it done.
Amen. You got it right there. You said it beautifully, Tori.
Oh, gosh. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
It was a
John.
Great pleasure.
There are going to be people who want to find you on the net.
Oh,
where can
good.
They find you?
My website is johndobbin.com. It's spelled a funny way. J-O-H-N. That's easy. J-O-H-N-D-O-B-B-Y-N.com. That's my website.
Great.
And full of information.
I'm going to go get your book.
Oh, bless you. Bless you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. I've got Tom Avidable here, who calls himself an accidental author, and I just can't wait to hear why. Hey, Tom. Welcome to Empowered Living Radio.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So why this accidental author?
I think in my high school yearbook, the kid least likely to write anything.
Oh.
And I never thought of writing as something I'd ever want to do. And then the DVD world came in. And in the DVD world, and early on, there was something called authoring. And authoring is separated from writing. So I'm really an author. I'm not really a writer. If you said to me, quick, pound out 50,000 words on this, I'd tell you, you know, there's a nearby lake. Examine the bottom of it.
I get it.
As an author, it's an omnipotent position. And writing is a department. There's the creative department, thinks up the ideas. There's the editorial department that tells you the ideas aren't as great, but they can be better. And then there's the writing department that actually sits down in front of a keyboard and pounds that thing out. And that monkey up there just keeps typing all the time, but not without direction from the author.
I get it.
And I know that I'm separating myself into different
bite-sized pieces. Yes, I can see that. You're starting to be a little schizophrenic here.
I know. And the idea being that if you take the totality of something and you make that your goal, you're probably not going to be too excited about it or, you know, or in fear of it or in some way focusing on the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm.
Finding the part you really like about it, like when somebody reads it and is really excited or somebody learns something or someone feels something or somebody comes up to you and says, wow, that was a great book. that can really get you through.
Sure.
And I guess where I'm going in terms of negativity, there's a two-step process to negativity. First part is to understand that negativity is not you.
Yes.
That you put a no rooms to let sign out on your emotional hotel that says negativity, you know, don't come here, you know, no rooms for negativity. And most people first have to do that because they make negativity part of their identity. I mean, and you see these people, they're at a party. You say, how are you doing? They say, oh, my dog died, my brother, and then they list all the negativities first.
Yes.
You know, and you say, okay, now I know what character you are in this book. You are the character that's never, ever going to see a bright day. You're going to see, you know, suntanned SPF factors. You
right,
know?
Right.
And on and on and on. So you're never going to see the good side of things if you dwell in a negative or if you identify with the negative. You become what you identify with.
Yes. That is such an important thing.
So both as it's true in literary arcs of characters and in life, you've got to make negativity something that you can break down and get over. And my operating theory is adapt, innovate, overcome. I wouldn't have written a book if I didn't adapt, innovate, and overcome. I wouldn't have become a film director.
So give me an example.
If you're open to adapting, then that means you're not a fixed entity,
mm-hmm.
okay, that you're going to meet a situation and you're not going to be 100% who you were 10 seconds ago because
right.
the situation has changed.
Right.
You have
you're
to adapt.
To change with it.
Exactly. Or at least adapt in a way
mm-hmm.
that whatever the pointy parts are that are coming at you aren't going to stick you because mm-hmm. you're going to move out of the way,
right.
you know, and then you're going to be able to use the parts that you can deal with and get rid of them first. That's adapting. And
mm-hmm.
that's really a self-image that says, I am not rigid. I am not stone. I
yes.
flex. I bend.
Yes,
I move.
I'm supple. I'm fluid. Right.
That's right. And in that agility, negativity can't plant a seed, can't
yes.
get to me.
Yes.
Innovate. if one size fit all, if one solution was the only solution there was, there'd be no need for innovation.
That's true.
So innovate.
We might as well just stop civilization right now. Sorry, folks, there's just no
That's
point.
That's it. Not going to get any better than this. Tip your waiters on the way out.
Yeah.
But innovation means that it's not a predestined course. And success or failure is not necessarily written. You have to innovate. You have to look at every situation and figure out a way to do it. Now, sometimes it's simple, but if it's a greater challenge, the innovation needs to be greater.
Yeah.
But what you just said, when you say that to yourself, is that there's a tool. That I'm not just standing here, you know, without any tools in my kit, or without whatever your analogy is, without a weapon, or without flowers, or whatever the need is. You're not alone. You have innovation. You can, after you've adapted, you can then create something that goes to the solution of whatever the challenge is.
Okay.
And then overcoming. It's kind of a natural extension. But overcoming, to me, is more than just winning. It's winning and taking the energy of the win with you to be applied next time you need to adapt. So it becomes
so it's
cyclical.
A cycle.
Right.
I love it. That
right.
is fantastic. I love that.
Well,
I love
I'm so glad you do.
Thank you so much for sharing that with me. I really appreciate it.
Well, and I hope that people at home listen to it and they get something out of it. That'd be the best thing in the whole world, wouldn't it?
That's wonderful. Now, people might want to find you on the net. Where do they find you?
Well, unfortunately, I have one of those names that's really difficult, but it's www, that was the easy part. Tom Avitabile, that's AVITABILE.com.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Hey, this has been a real pleasure. Thank you so much.
Okay.
And for what you do.
Thank you. You're welcome. Folks, you can find website information on all of these authors, hear recordings of previous shows, and get information on upcoming guests and topics on my website, ToriEldridge.com. Next week, I'll be speaking ninja to ninja with a dear friend of mine who has had an astounding adventure. He survived for 21 days in the Himalayas for the television challenge Naked and Afraid. Hakeem Meisler not only showed great survival skills, as I knew he would, but he demonstrated tremendous empathy, leadership, and communication. I hope you'll tune in to hear all about the insights he gained and the life lessons he learned in this very ninja conversation. In the meantime, you may follow me on Twitter at Tori Eldridge and on the Empowered Living Radio Facebook page. If you found some value in tonight's conversation, please share this podcast with your friends. A little empowerment goes a long way. Empowered Living Radio is a copyrighted podcast owned by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC. You can find archived podcasts of all of our wonderful shows at authorsontheair.com. This is All Jam Up by Jim Kimo West. Learn about him at jimkimowest.com or on my website, torieldridge.com. Until next week, when we meet again, aloha nui loa.